As Israel and the United States continue to rain down fire on Iran, the Islamic Republic is retaliating across the Middle East. Where this destruction will lead us, no one can guess. But why this war is being fought has become clearer, though it seems nothing much to do with the reasons first advanced by Donald Trump. From Tel Aviv, we're joined by the distinguished columnist for Haaretz newspaper, Gideon Levy, whose byline is known around the world. In a long career, Gideon has fought with the IDF, served as an aide to the Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres, and is now a powerful liberal voice in Israel, severely critical of his country's occupation of Palestinian lands. Gideon, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you so much, David.
Gideon, is it clear now that this war has, from the beginning, been an Israeli operation?
It's a combination, it's a mixture, but it's very clear that Israel pushed for this war. But you know, it takes two for tango, and the American president collaborated with it. So it's a joint project, a joint venture, and we will see the outcome. But Israel has definitely a major role in pushing the United States into this.
Do you think there's actually, in the last sort of day, been an attempt by America to blame Israel?
No, this will come later. It will depend much on the outcome. Because if the outcome will be, which I doubt, obviously, but if the outcome will be an hilarious victory, then I'm sure that Donald Trump will take all the credit to himself.
Of course.
But if it will fail, obviously, many in the United States will blame Israel, and Israel might regret the whole thing because the price will be enormous.
If Israel is so crucial to the war beginning, I presume it will only end when Israel wants it to end.
No, here I'm not sure, David, because I think that Israel depends much too much on American supply, American support, and I don't see Israel continuing it when the American president tells Israel don't. He might quit and let Israel go wild. This might be. But if the Americans will say stop, Israel will have to stop.
Is it clear to you what Israel wants from this war?
I'm not sure it's clear to Israel. There is the dream of changing the regime in Iran. And I think it's maybe a wishful dream, but not a dream that can be easily achieved, if at all. And for sure not by bombs from the air, as many as you throw. And Israel does not learn this lesson one time after the other. But by the end of the day, it's another attempt to change the Middle East by force, by military force. And I'm very skeptical about the outcomes. Again and again, Israel goes to those operations with all kinds of aspirations and comes back. We saw it in June. What changed ever since June? In June, they promised us that Iran is neutralized. And here we are.
How many victories does Israel need?
That's a good question. As many as possible, obviously, but unfortunately, I cannot recall one victory of Israel ever since the war of 1948.
This was an assassination operation, wasn't it? Israel waited until it knew, superb intelligence, until it knew that these leaders would all be meeting, and then assassinated them with pinpoint accuracy. That's such an Israeli MO. But it raises the question, if you can do that with such accuracy, why do you have to flatten Gaza?
Because you can. The answer is because you can. And the more complex answer is that those assassinations belong more to the world of Hollywood rather than to reality. They are very, very impressive. The intelligence, as you just mentioned, is really accurate and impressive. But by the end of the day, what do you achieve by all those assassinations? In many cases, the successors are much more radical than the one you assassinated. You don't solve anything by those assassinations. Yes, morally, it has some meaning, and for the voters in Israel and in the United States, this is very impressive. But we know after the foam gets away, you ask yourself, okay, we are in the same position. Look at Hamas. We killed everybody. All the leadership of Hamas was assassinated, and Hamas is live and kicking in Gaza.
And Hezbollah.
And Hezbollah the same, sure, and Iran will be the same, I'm afraid.
Do you think there's going to be a fresh invasion of Lebanon?
Yeah, yeah, the troops are now on the ground already. This morning they are there. Israel took this opportunity that Hezbollah made a major mistake in joining this war, and they took this as an opportunity, and they will again go inside and destroy and kill. And remember, by the end of this war in Lebanon, for sure, we'll be in the same situation.
On Late Night Live, I'm talking to Gideon Levy, the distinguished columnist with Haaretz newspaper. Gideon is in Tel Aviv. Are Israelis, Gideon, I mean, it's the war began only on Saturday, but are Israelis celebrating what's happening? Do you get any sense of whether this has lifted the mood of the country?
No, not at all. By all means, not at all, except of the right-wingers, the extreme right-wingers, the lunatics and the messiah, who see everything as a sign for revelation of God, and God is Netanyahu, obviously. No, there is a very, very heavy atmosphere in Israel. People are exhausted. People are tired. People are scared. And the tension, the daily life. I mean, there is no normality in the last 2.5 years. How long can you take it? I don't compare it by all means to the life of the people in Gaza. But also for Israelis to live now, we are on hold, running to the shelter every second hour and not knowing anything. Where are we aiming? When will it be ended? What will come out of it? Nothing, just being led in the darkness.
Gideon, is there any way in which this war is a cover for further occupation of the West Bank?
Unfortunately, the occupation of the West Bank does not need the war in Iran, because it's taking place in every single moment. By the time we are talking, I've been just yesterday in the West Bank, and it changes from day to day. Yes, those wars, all of them, is a good cover-up to change the West Bank, but you don't have to go until Tehran in order to continue the annexation of the West Bank. It's happening, and it's happening in a very dramatic way. By the time that we are all busy with Gaza, with Iran, with Lebanon, and it is irreversible. The new reality in the West Bank is definitely an irreversible, and we should take it into account.
Why is it, do you think, that the world is taking this occupation of the West Bank so calmly? Yes, of course, there have been statements deploring it, but they've just been statements deploring. There doesn't seem to be particular international anger.
First of all, anger is not enough. You know, even if the world is angry, Israel continues. You have to translate it into actions. I mean, condemnations are not very pleasant, but they never change the policy of Israel. And the world saw the annexation, the gradual but systematic annexation of the West Bank throughout decades now. It's not that now the world lost interest, and until 2 years ago the world had interest. Yes, the media had more interest, the world had more interest, but the world never translated into any kind of sanctions over Israel. So now it's easier, yes, because the attention is now somewhere else. The attention of the media, the attention of the politicians, the attention of the public opinion. But it's not new. Israel is doing what it is doing in the West Bank without any interruption. The world never did anything to stop it.
Does Netanyahu care about the collapsing support for Israel around the world? Yes, he has conducted this war in Gaza. Yes, he is occupying the West Bank. Yes, there is the bombing of Iran. And polling in the United States, in Europe, and in Australia show dramatic falls in respect for the state of Israel. Does Netanyahu worry about that? Does he see his country spending its political capital?
He is worried, and not enough. And the entire Israeli public opinion is worried, but not enough. From the first days of Israel, When Ben-Gurion say this unforgettable sentence, it doesn't matter what the gentiles say, it matters what the Jew do. Ever since then, for Israel, and much more in the last 2 years under Netanyahu, in the war in Gaza, for the Israelis, there is one narrative. The world is against us no matter what we do. The world is anti-Semitic, and we can't do anything about it, and therefore we should do whatever we feel is the right thing by totally ignoring the world. And it's work, you see. I mean, the whole world is against Israel, and Israel has the freedom to do things that no other country in the world could have done. So as long as the American administration hugs Israel, supplies Israel, and let Israel go wherever it wants, the world is secondary in Israel's considerations. It's not very pleasant to see these countries like Australia, which was very friendly to Israel throughout the years, turning its back to Israel. But, you know, Israelis are arrogant enough and brainwashed enough to think that we don't need the public opinion in Australia and not in any other place, because anyhow they hate us, so why would we care?
Is it also crucial to Israeli thinking that Palestinians hate them and that nothing can be done about that?
It's again the same answer, as they are being told, most of us, not all Israelis. I must hear emphasis that not all Israelis think the same, obviously, like not all Australians think the same. But for most of the Israelis, all the Palestinians were born to kill, all the Palestinians are Hamas, and all the Palestinians are terrorists, and we can't do anything but kill them, or but fight them, or but transfer them, eliminate them. There is no other way to communicate with them. That's the mindset of Israel today.
Of the majority, of the nation.
Absolutely. There is nothing more clear than the hatred toward the Palestinians and lack of faith, and above all, lack of belief that they are human beings like us. This is the most outrageous thing you can say here. Do you know that Palestinians are also human beings? This by itself is a betrayal in Israel mindset.
Does Israel have ambitions, do you believe, beyond Gaza, the West Bank? I mean, to what extent would Israel like to seize a really decent chunk of Syria?
First of all, we are already conquering some parts of Syria, more than the Golanites even. Look, Israel does not have a very, very clear plan for each neighbor, but it is more about taking opportunities, and wherever there is an opportunity to extend, to push the border away, to conquer, Israel is doing it. Would it be in Lebanon? Would it be in Syria? Would it be in former times in Egypt and in Jordan? That's the whole basic of Israel's policy, to try to make Israel bigger and greater also in territory. No doubt this is an ambition, but this ambition is not always possible to implement, and therefore Israel is still between the river and the sea. But we have now an American president in Tel Aviv, an American ambassador, the official representative of the United States of America, who believes that Israel's border must be much farther than this and should include Iraq, Syria, Jordan, and part of Egypt, because the Bible says so. So, you know, let's ask how come that such an ambassador is still in office.
What do you think is going to happen at the elections? I suppose it will depend very largely on the success of the current military operation. But is Netanyahu opposed sufficiently, coherently in the country for him to really be under threat?
Look, I'm one of the few who don't think that it matters so much, that it is crucial. For most of the Israelis, Netanyahu, yes or no, is the main question about our future. I have my doubts about it, because Netanyahu is also representing some kind of ambitions and way and beliefs and values. And will he be elected or not does not mean much, because the alternative is better, no doubt, but not better enough in order to believe that Israel will turn into a paradise if we only get rid of Netanyahu. Not at all. Now, Netanyahu is doing very well after this war, no doubt. He increases in the poll. Netanyahu has a record of a political magician. If after the 7th of October, the fiasco of the 7th of October, he remained one more day in office, it means that he's a magician. No politician in the world could have survived this. No one. And he did. And he's still there. And he might be reelected. It's too early to judge now, but he might be reelected, yes. But I'll be very happy if he will not. But unlikely, most of my friends, I don't think that Israel will be very different after he will quit.
It's curious, isn't it, that at the moment there are such hopes placed on the replacement, placed on the disappearance of leaders, of the Ayatollah in Iran, of Trump in America, of Netanyahu in Israel. But your argument, I think, carries great weight, that these people are there because of the nature of their countries, and that's not going to change.
I couldn't phrase it better than this. I really couldn't phrase it better than this. That's exactly the point. It is so much easier to believe if we'll only remove by force or by elections Y or X, Netanyahu or Trump, then everything will be fine. And it is so much more complicated to ask, what does the alternative suggest? Is there an alternative plan? Is it really so that those leaders took over public opinion, and if they go, public opinion will change all of a sudden? No, Netanyahu and Donald Trump were elected because they reflect very deep streams in American and Israeli society. They didn't come to us from the sky, from heaven. They are representing in a very authentic way what Israelis and Americans, at least part of them, want. And their replacement will not change this.
Can you imagine peace in Israel?
Not anymore. Not anymore. No, no. Those years, those good, naive years are over. First of all, I'm looking much more for some more justice. Not total justice, obviously, but some more justice, some more equality. About peace, I don't see it happening. Not in my lifetime. No, no. Brainwash systems are so deep and so efficient. The belief that we can live in peace at all. And above all, we lack leaders who will take us there. In both sides, by the way. The Palestinians lack now leadership no less than the Israelis.
Gideon, thank you so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great pleasure to answer your excellent questions, if I may.
Thank you.
All the best, David.
All the best to
bye
you.
Bye.
I've been speaking.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Gideon Levy, columnist with Haaretz, distinguished author, a profound critic of his nation's policies. This is Late Night Live.